What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
During the summer when the weather gets hot, I can only imagine how much time you plan to spend outside with friends or alone on your couch with that AC blasting. AT&T 5G and home internet keeps you connected, so you can enjoy all the summertime vibes, whether you're sharing pics from a rooftop, video calling your friends from an outdoor concert, or streaming your favorite show episode after episode. So, stay connected to your favorite people and your favorite things with AT&T 5G and home internet. AT&T 5G requires compatible plan and device. Coverage not available everywhere. Learn more at att.com/5G for you.
You're listening to Waiting on Reparations, on Reparations, a production of iHeartRadio.
We waiting on reparations.
Skin is in my latte, but my talk ways is chalk white as a dove flock at a cockfight. All my life getting told that I'm chocolate, that I'm scary spice. Doesn't even matter that I'm posh spice. With a dark side, I'd be fairly bright, but it doesn't matter. Still get shot dead on a cop light. Like a bad dog, there's another case left to suffocate. Like a tadpole out of water or a bottom of a parasite. The bacon, the pavement, the Fahrenheit. Of a summer day, while my mother waits, feeling terrified. She's wondering whether I'm running late. My body's traced in chalk lines. Yo, to be verified.
What would I do if my verse not written well? I am a black male, no doubt, shit as hell. Could be somebody's target practice when they lick a shell. Shit for health, heart, sickle cell, or you pick a cell. I chose rap cause I'm lazy and short. Fuck playing on courts, dog, I'm trying to stay out of court. Still single cause I'm threatened by the pain of divorce. They shooting niggas like they made it a sport. Get blazed in my fort, love staying indoors. So for sure I'll hide. So cold I don't even wanna go outside. Fucking pigs all patrolling with a chromed out nine. If I get into a scuffle then I know I'll die. Taste smog on my tongue when I breathe. I don't know what to believe. I'd protest but I don't want a disease. So I'm dressing like a billboard, feeling like a product. Hope these cops don't think a nigga selling narcotics. Dope, dope. Hey, hey. What's happening? My name is Dope Knife.
I'm Lingua Franca.
We are waiting on reparations.
Hurry up.
Give us our goddamn money. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I just got out of a 7-hour commission meeting in which public comment was given by, you know, around 100, 150
wait,
folks
back
for
up.
And against.
Wait, back up, back up, back up. 7-hour commission meeting.
Yeah, yeah.
So what time is it right now that we're recording?
It is fucking this? It's 1:28 in the morning.
1:28 in the goddamn
I'm not going to lie. I've had a couple glasses of wine.
And I've smoked a few blunts. So... Oh, before I forget, the beats on this episode are provided by my homie Factor Chandelier. That's at Factor Chandelier on Instagram. He's a dope-ass producer. You guys should check him out. You know, this is my 14th day of my quarantine.
I thought you were about to say 14th blunt, and I was going
no.
to believe you.
I was going to say it's my 14th day of quarantine. So, you know, I haven't gotten sick.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm going to go get tested for COVID tomorrow, but I'm assuming that I either didn't get it from you, or if I did get it, I'm asymptomatic. So
I got from the contact tracer I spoke to was that after 10 days, if I had no symptoms, I could start going out in public again, which I started to do today.
Wearing your mask, of course.
Wearing my mask, of course. But yeah, I mean, I guess we're COVID free.
Yeah,
we'll find out tomorrow.
I took a break on how much I was smoking the last 2 weeks. I was like, man, if I start getting symptoms and I was burning them down,
your
then that'll just make it worse.
Gonna fucking
so
croak.
Today I woke up, I was like, man, I'm feeling kind of good. I mean, you know, knock on wood or whatever you got to knock on. But I was like, hey, I'm just going to smoke all the dope today.
I want to talk about the commission meeting for a minute, for a second. So many people came out in support of my plan to defund the police, in a word. You know, we've been calling it, like, reimagining public safety as a way to, like, gain more public buy-in. But
do you want to say that on the air?
What? I mean, yeah, because, whatever. Like, people, like, I'd be using the defund the police fucking hashtag to, like, get likes and or spread awareness, even though, like, you know, what's in a name, what's in terminology.
So I'm just saying it's all, like, taken care of. Like, there's no more, you don't need that political strategy in the bag anymore.
If you are listening to this show, you're not going to be fooled by me in public saying reimagine public safety. Like, literally at the meeting, all the Republicans and most of the fucking, like, radical anarchist regular townie, like, young folks that came through were like, either like, you, I don't support defunding the police, or fuck yeah, abolish the police, defunding it isn't even enough. And so it doesn't really matter what terminology we use, people know what we mean. So even if I do think reimagining public safety is an honest take of, like, what I'm trying to do,
yeah,
I really want us to take a creative and, like, bold approach to, like, thinking anew what it means to keep our community safe. It means giving the police less money.
If they're gonna be demilitarized.
Yeah. So that was exciting, but it did take maybe like 4 or 5 hours, and then.
So is it just like literally four and five hours
of people just coming up and talking for 3 minutes? Yeah.
Would you describe most of the discourse as like grievance or?
So about 20 or 30 people came out in opposition to defunding the police. The rest of the folks that came out, the other 100 or so. 80 or so were in support of defunding the police. We've had mostly peaceful protests here in Athens so far, except for police violence where they tear gas and shot with beanbag rounds peaceful protesters a couple of weeks ago. But tonight we had a gathering of like Blue Lives Matter Republicans waving American flags on the steps of City Hall. And then folks that are here to, you know, end in unpaid prison labor and like defund the police, that were like playing Fuck the Police by NWA and dancing and like holding signs. And reports indicated that an older white man who was with the Blue Lives Matter crowd came up the steps of City Hall and attempted to wrest away a megaphone from a black trans activist that was leading the Black Lives Matter protests, dragging him down the stairs in like an altercation. And so it's like, we've had all this peaceful shit until the fucking right wing appears. We've been just chilling, singing Kumbaya and We Shall Overcome. And then
the instigators. They're the ones who are like ripping down like people's signs and shit. Costing little girls and stuff.
Yeah. Well, but I guess I forgot to mention the car caravan on Saturday went well. We had about 100 cars show out, and we drove around to sites of police violence in Athens, shut down downtown for about an hour of the radio show.
Aren't you getting ready to do that again
really
next
good.
Weekend?
And we're going to do it again this Saturday, and I'm actually bringing your ass now that none of us have coronavirus. So.
Yeah, I'm going to go participate now.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. It's going to be cool. But you had some exciting news this week also.
Oh, I got to do fundraiser with the legendary Jerry Conway. He's the co-creator of The Punisher, and he used to write Spider-Man and a bunch of other cool comic book things. But he put out a call to get some, you know, illustrators and artists who were of color to do a little reappropriation of the Punisher logo, the character that he created. It's, you know, the logo's been appropriated by police, which is really ironic because cops have started wearing the Punisher skull on like their uniform, like stickers on their car and shit. And any sort of passive following of the comic book, and it's quite explicit that Punisher doesn't fuck with cops. Punisher especially doesn't fuck with cops who fuck with him.
Yeah.
But I know I got to design like a, you know, Black Lives Matter skull, and all the proceeds are going towards Black Lives Matter.
How much money have y'all raised so far?
So far, I think the whole thing's raised like, I think like $23,000 so far.
That's dope.
That was like 2 days ago when I checked. So
that's ill, man. I'm proud of you. Proud of you, Rumi.
Pretty cool. And yeah, and then also it put me on to, you know, some of the fellow artists who participated in it.
That's sick. Yeah.
Put on to some new black, you know, illustrators and stuff. So
that's dope.
There's a link to that in my Instagram bio, dope_knife. So just check that out.
I feel like we should have done this in reverse, but like we got lots of good news this week. We also got a lot of bad news this week. I've been getting death threats for one.
Fucking.
On the internet. One man suggested I should be
hung. Which platform?
On Facebook.
Oh, there
One man
go.
Suggested I should be hung from a tree. Another man suggested that bricks be thrown through the windows of our home.
Didn't some cops get involved?
Cops called me to let me know that they were investigating the situation, asked if I wanted to press charges, and I declined.
You declined? How come?
Because, I mean, there's two things. They suggested that it might be unlikely that they could be brought up, they could be effectively prosecuted for this, since they didn't explicitly say, I'm going to hang you from a tree.
Yeah.
It was just suggested that this is something that should happen. Someone should throw bricks through our window. But in addition, I feel like I just don't believe that the criminal legal system reforms people. Like, these motherfuckers get thrown in jail, and then they're around a bunch of other white supremacists who have committed crimes. They get involved in, like, a white supremacist gang. They get their ideology re-entrenched through that experience. Or just bitterness through having been incarcerated over threats to a black activist. And they just, like, double down on that mission in their lives. So, like, what we need to do instead is to, like, take a really close look at the schools they went to, the churches they have attended, who their parents are, what affiliations they have in terms of organizations in the community, and, like, do kind of an autopsy on, like, how do these organizations, how do these institutions create such evil men, and how do we reform and remake those institutions so that we stop making people like this? Because, you know, Robbie Bailey or whatever, Chuck Jones, like, it's too late for them, but it might not be too late for their sons that are going to Athens Christian right now if we figure out how to fix Athens Christian. And so I just want to redirect people's attention to, like, the structural level of, like, what makes racists rather than punishing individual racists for the institutions that made them shitty.
You know where else there's a lot of racists? In our comment
section on the fucking podcast.
Oh, our comment section is a hot shit show.
Yeah, you check that shit out?
You know what? I glanced at it, but, like, I just, in general, whenever I do stuff, I'm like one of those cats. I try my hardest to not count numbers and not read comments because, you know, I obsess over shit.
I love reading the comment section. I love getting mad about what white races say about me, man. I just get energized.
But I did
and
glance at it, and
enough
people have commented on it. You know, my little brother is, you know, is in the military. He was like, "Yo, man, you good?" Like, yeah, I'm good.
So, I mean, I guess all that to say, you know, leave us some 5 stars if you like the show. And
yeah,
some
of
comments
course.
About what you like about the show. It's also good feedback for us moving forward.
But this kind of leads into what we're going to talk about for today's episode, which is going to be part one in a reoccurring series that we're going to be doing where we spotlight different aspects of racism in a series that I'd like to call
That's Racist. So I think it's really important to do this because I think we've been operating from some basic assumptions that we want to make sure that we share with our audience. We've been working off the premise throughout the show that folks, you know, hold these same basic assumptions about what racism is and how it operates. But I think it's important as well to take a step back and explore where we're coming from and what these things actually mean. As like a practical matter for just like, yo, we, you know, love you for listening and I want to make sure we're all on the same page. But also in line with the theme of the show, thinking about the way that how we define racism also inflects our political reality. I see a lot of times in public policy, I saw earlier tonight in our commission meeting, how definitions matter so much for how resources get allocated, how the law is upheld. We were having a debate earlier about what the term resources mean. A bunch of funding was going out to all these indigent services providers and organizations that do work with the homeless, etc., who provide resources. And this one entity didn't get funding because it wasn't defined as like providing resources. Like, well, isn't education a resource? Isn't this training a resource for people? And so we have to be very clear in what different words mean in order for like governments to operate and for public policy to be effective.
It's like in the battle of debates and ideas, it's like the words are weapons and it's like you have to know how to wield them the right way.
Totally. Interpretation matters so much. And so we're going to get a little bit into the definition of racism today, both to like establish a common ground with y'all and to kind of think about the way that that language influences our political reality.
Especially when you're having discussions with people who, you know, are trying to prove that an action, something they did, or that an aspect of what you guys are discussing to
people who are trying to prove that it isn't racist, they're always quick to jump to the dictionary definition of the word racism to prove what it means. So let's check out a couple of those, right? So we have in the Oxford Languages, we have the belief that different races possess distinct characteristics, abilities, or qualities, especially so as to distinguish them as inferior or superior to one another.
And then in the Collins English Dictionary, you've got the belief that races have distinctive cultural characteristics determined by hereditary factors and that this endows some races with an intrinsic superiority over others. Abusive or aggressive behavior towards members of another race on the basis of such a belief.
Now, what all these definitions do is firmly set the concept of racism as being a belief, a doctrine that someone subscribes to. These are safe definitions because they frame racism as being strictly like a moral failing and something that only pertains to some of us and not all of us. You know, it's something that you can write off as being, oh, that person's bad because that person thinks X. And it doesn't necessarily address the broader aspects of racism and how it affects every aspect of our lives. This is kind of like applying the bad apples philosophy to the definition of racism.
Well, the thing about the bad apples, like, metaphor is that the full saying is that a couple of bad apples spoil the whole bunch. I think that's very, like, poignant for thinking about the way that systemic racism, institutional racism operates, because when you have individual actors all, or, you know, even some of them doing this kind of thing, and you have other people who aren't checking their power when it comes to enforcing regulations or, you know, interacting with others in a racist way, when you don't have any sorts of accountability around that, the whole system becomes inflected with this racist ideology. And so through every sort of interpersonal interaction with folks, every single middle level manager that decides not to hire a black person, it might not be a company-wide policy per se, but it becomes systemic when it is a trend historically and no one is checking that. And so it's kind of accepted as the status quo.
Yeah, it doesn't require that somebody be actively racist in order for it to perpetuate. Like all that work was done hundreds of years ago, literally. And systems were put in place. So it's like, hey, let's have this be so ingrained into the fabric of society so that hundreds of years from now, even if public sentiment changes, those systems are still in place to perpetuate the system of racism.
During the summertime when the weather gets hot, I can only imagine how much time you plan to spend outside with friends and family or on your couch with that AC blasting. AT&T 5G and home internet keeps you connected, whether you're at home or on the go, so you can stay connected to your loved ones and to your favorite things. Whether you're sharing pics from the best rooftops, video calling your friends from an outdoor concert, or streaming your favorite show, episode after episode after episode. So connect at home or on the move with AT&T 5G and home internet and create memories and more all summer long. AT&T 5G requires compatible plan and device. Coverage not available everywhere. Learn more at att.com/5G for you.
Father's Day is coming, a day we celebrate the guy who's always there for us. To crack a dad joke. Well, you know what's not a dad joke? Getting $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker with the purchase of his favorite cocktail capsule pack. $50 off. No dad joke. See, this is a dad joke. I lost my glasses today, and guess who I bumped into? Everyone. But the Bartesian Cocktail Maker, it's no joke. Each cocktail capsule contains real fruit juices and all-natural bitters, so dad can make over 60 premium cocktails he loves. Sidecars, old fashions, gimlets, all with the push of a button. So, for the dad who loves a cocktail with friends and a good joke from time to time, get the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. $50 off now until Father's Day. Visit bartesian.com/father to get 50 off the best premium cocktail maker for dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This very issue of defining the word racism came to the attention of Drake University graduate Kennedy Mitchum. A few months ago, she sent an email to Merriam-Webster, the dictionary, bringing this up and urging that they update the definition for the word racism to represent the true meaning of what the word is. Making her case, she stated, "Racism is not only prejudice against a certain race due to color of a person's skin, as it states in your dictionary, it is both prejudice combined with social and institutional power. It is a system of advantage based on skin color." To her surprise, they hit her back up the next day, and they actually agreed with her, and
They updated the definition,
and she changed the definition of the word racism.
And we actually have Kennedy here with us today to talk about the case she made to Merriam-Webster and the impact of the definition's change.
Okay, so we're here with Kennedy Mitchum, recent Drake University graduate, a 22-year-old, that effectively lobbied Merriam-Webster to get their definition of racism changed in the dictionary. How are you today, Kennedy?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to have you here.
Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, so talk to us a little bit about what informs your definition of racism.
My own experiences, I've definitely been a part of a lot of predominantly white institutions growing up. In St. Louis, a lot of that racism that I experienced was more blatant, a lot more overt. But going into college, a lot of that, you know, it was a lot more microaggressions. It was a lot more covert. It was a lot more undercover. They didn't really want to acknowledge it as racism. So those combined, those different experiences definitely made me understand how racism is very multidimensional. It's more than just calling someone the N-word or just derogatory terms. It's a lot of the way that systems work to continue to oppress people. It's a way that people continually, their implicit bias still works to, you know, show that oppression. So my life experiences definitely informed the way that I see the word now.
What was like the deciding factor? Did something happen that made you just open your web browser that day and send that email out? Was it like a particular incident, or was it just a buildup, the frustration?
It was really both, but I think the current climate definitely sparked that a lot more, because I've gotten into, you know, arguments about what racism is and what is and what's not racist, like, multiple times on social media. But a couple weeks ago when I posted about, you know, some things that I experienced at Drake, and a person, you know, wanted to say, no, that's not racism, and that, and copied and pasted the Merriam-Webster definition, and I explained to them. I was like, yeah, this is the last straw. I can't take it anymore. And that's what prompted me, especially right now. Like, if you don't understand that it's more than that, then it's more than just the basic, the surface level things is deeply ingrained in a lot of these systems we see, then, like, I don't know what to tell you. So I'm like, let me just hit up. I found that they were just the root of one problem. They were, it was just one way that people would go, is the definition way. So I'm like, okay, let me reach out to Merriam-Webster and ask them to change it, since a lot of people want to use that definition as a way to kind of stay stagnant and not really grow. And understanding.
Yeah, for sure. Would you mind speaking on some of those early incidences of racism that you experienced, as well as how they differ from some specific examples of the covert kinds of racism you encountered at Drake?
In high school, like, I had one girl, she came up to me like my first day of high school, and she wrote like with a Sharpie, and she came up to me and she wrote on me, And she was like, wow, it still shows up. And I'm like,
yeah.
Like, girl, what?
Yeah, definitely this sense of entitlement to black bodies and this, like, sense of comfort with, like, touching us, coming too close to us, violating our personal space, up until, like, riding on a person. Sure, this person was, like, an adolescent, but, like, these people gotta learn at some point.
Exactly. And, I mean, earlier on, I was, like, especially because I was in the environment that was predominantly white, but the climate was still, like, okay, I'm still treated like normal. Like, I was still able to be myself. So I was definitely in that same mindset, like, when I was younger, when I was, like, 15, 16, like, oh, maybe there's just a few rotten apples, you know, like, that girl, maybe that's going to be an isolated incident. But up until, like, the Mike Brown thing, I was like, oh, like, no, this is not an isolated incident, because, you know, a lot of people's true colors came to show, because I think that was my junior year of high school, and I was, like, the diversity club president. And everything, and I was just able to understand, like, how much deeper it is in comparison to when I went off to college. And it was a lot of the, you know, when I walked down the hallway, no one would make eye contact with me. When I was in different group projects, a lot of people didn't value my opinion. I would say something, and then they would be like, okay, ignore it. Yeah. And then 5 seconds later, a white counterpart would say the exact same thing. And they'd be like, oh my God, yes, that is such a great idea. And I'm like, oh my God, I just said that. Like, it honestly is like mental warfare sometimes, because it's like gaslighting. You think you're just being extra. You think it's just a you problem until you actually talk to, you know, people who look like you and who experience the same exact things.
Same thing, yeah.
And they're like, yeah, those microaggressions, man, like, that's enough is enough. And especially even from your own professors who are literally paid to, you know, educate you, but here you are and they're calling you a different black girl's name every single time.
Oh my God, I swear to God, like, yeah. Man. When I first got on the commission here in Athens, the mayor would frequently mix me up with the black auditor, who has very short hair. She is light-skinned like me, but, like, she's sitting in a completely different part of the chamber and always is. And she'd be like, oh, you know, Stephanie made a good point when I just said it. And I'd be like, yo, what the fuck? You're the mayor of a city. Literally. You are the mayor of a city. But, yeah, so, like, there's these overtly aggressive forms of racism that's, like, antagonization through, you know, getting, like, violations of personal space, stuff like that. And then there's these more subtle forms of marginalization through averted eye contact, mm-hmm. or dismissing opinions that definitely build up over time to diminish a person's self-esteem, you know, their sense of self-worth.
Yes.
And, like, a lifetime of that is, like, really heavy to bear, no doubt. Yes. But talk to us a little bit about, you know, what was wrong with the old definition of racism in the dictionary?
Right. So the definition basically states, you know, that racism is this belief that, you know, one's race determines their abilities, and that racial differences make one race superior to the other. But the thing is, it's not just, racism isn't just believing that you're better than someone because of the color of your skin, or just calling someone those overtly, you know, derogatory terms. I mean, you have to, when we're talking about racism, we have to really describe how it really infiltrates, like, every part of our lives, every aspect. You must include the word systemic when we're describing racism, because a big part of racism is putting systems in place that are designed to keep one race of people behind. So that originally wasn't included in the definition, but it's super important to add that in there.
Yeah, it reminds me of that Stokely Carmichael quote, if a white man wants to lynch me, that's his problem. If he's got the power to lynch me, that's my problem. Yeah. Racism is not a question of attitude, it's a question of power.
Exactly.
So now, like, assuming, so that they are going to change the definition,
they changed
right?
it.
Okay, they changed it. So now that the definition has changed, at least in one dictionary, like, what's the next step? What do you think are some further steps?
We're really trying to get that changed in every dictionary. Well, right now, I'm working with a lot of different scholars to get it changed in every dictionary, because it's still, like, in the Oxford Dictionary, which is a very prominent one, and in dictionary.com, they still only have that basic, you know, basically what I described earlier. So that's the next step besides just trying to, you know, inform people on the deeper aspects. I feel like a lot of people who want to be ignorant, they're still going to be ignorant about it until it's like they're not going to experience it. But it's like you have to just, boom, you have to really just be open to other people who might not have the same experiences as you and just listen. I think this is a very important time to just sit back and let people's voices be heard and actually listen to your counterparts and what they're saying instead of just trying to be ignorant about it, because that's not going to get us anywhere. It's really going to just leave us in the same position we are now, where there's black men, black women being killed, being murdered, being abducted, and there's nobody being held accountable for it, because apparently people want to act like black bodies, you know, they're not worth anything, which is just not true.
What do you think is the wider impact of the definition's change?
I think that I hope that it allows for a lot more conversations about racism that are actually accurate to what racism is. I think that it was definitely people were trying to take racism and, you know, just make it what they wanted it to be because of how loosely, you know, worded that it was in the beginning. So I hope that allows for more productive conversation. I hope that allows for people to understand their biases and actually put forth some change to actually, you know, correct them, because it's not always on people of color to come up with solutions. This is a time where you see we need solidarity and we need people of all races to really come together to fix the problem, because, I mean, at the end of the day, we didn't create it. So it really needs to be addressed and solved all together, universally.
Hey, I had one last question. Everything that I've seen of people like covering you and what you've done, they only refer to you as a college graduate. So is there something else that we can refer to you as besides?
I think that has been bothering me, especially because my Drake experiences have hurt me so much. Like, it's really been a mental warfare and, like, been such a, like, I don't, it's really annoying how they're getting a lot of publicity and how they're really doing all of this when at the end of the day, they didn't take care of me at all as a student there. They still aren't taking care of their people, students of color, which you can basically ask anyone. So I'm glad that you brought that up, because
get it off your chest.
That bothers me so much, because they're just taking so much PR from this, but they're still not putting anything in place to actually protect and actually hold those professors accountable who say racist stuff, hold those students accountable who do racist stuff that might not be overtly racist, but it still hurts all the same. So you can just call me by my name, Kennedy Mitchum. I also don't like the black, because a lot of other people are just saying, you know, black woman, but I'm like, I'm not just a black woman. I'm like, can you just say
graduate,
my name?
Black woman.
Yeah, exactly.
Educated black changes the world.
Well spoken, no. Black person.
Yeah.
Literally. I'm like, oh my God. But that's so funny you brought that up.
Well, Miss Mitchum.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming and talking with us on the Waiting to Reparations podcast.
So thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Have a good one.
And so when you have these systems that were constructed through these iterative interactions between people, this one person that, you know, treated someone some way, and then like you get a bunch of people who are treating someone this way, and it creates this system that's been in place for hundreds of years, thousands of years. What's interesting from a public policy perspective is the way that we are hindered in our policy from addressing the status quo of the system, that which is racist, and dismantling parts of that system that are racist. So, for example, in the local government, we've been trying to work on getting more minority contractors with city contracts for paving roads, building buildings, doing roofing, doing solar panel installation, because all of these white firms have had advantage for hundreds of years, tens of decades, with regards to the way that they've been able to accrue capital and actually maintain a business, whereas black businesses were burned to the ground, etc. But law prevents us, given like equal protections under the law, it's equally discriminatory for us to give contracts to exclusively white people as it is to give contracts exclusively to black people. There's no way that we can enact a law that says we are going to give 30% of our city contracts to black-owned firms, because that's discrimination as well. And so this kind of this kind of policy helps uphold the system, but it operates under the guise of protecting everyone from discrimination.
Like everyone's equal to begin with.
Everyone's already equal. So like you can't discriminate against white people by saying we're going to give contracts to black-owned firms.
Yeah.
And it really prevents us from actually addressing the historical roots of a lot of the disparities that we have in our community, because of these things that have been so ongoing for such a long time historically.
During the summertime when the weather gets hot, I can only imagine how much time you plan to spend outside with friends and family or on your couch with that AC blasting. AT&T 5G and home internet keeps you connected, whether you're at home or on the go, so you can stay connected to your loved ones and to your favorite things. Whether you're sharing pics from the best rooftops, video calling your friends from an outdoor concert, or streaming your favorite show, episode after episode after episode. So connect at home or on the move with AT&T 5G and home internet and create memories and more all summer long. AT&T 5G requires compatible plan and device. Coverage not available everywhere. Learn more at att.com/5G for you.
Father's Day is coming, a day we celebrate the guy who's always there for us to crack a dad joke. Well, you know what's not a dad joke? Getting $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker with the purchase of his favorite cocktail capsule pack. $50 off. No dad joke. See, this is a dad joke. I lost my glasses today, and guess who I bumped into? Everyone. But the Bartesian Cocktail Maker, it's no joke. Each cocktail capsule contains real fruit juices and all-natural bitters, so dad can make over 60 premium cocktails he loves. Sidecars, old fashions, gimlets, all with the push of a button. So, for the dad who loves a cocktail with friends and a good joke from time to time, get the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. $50 off now until Father's Day. Visit bartesian.com/father to get 50 off the best premium cocktail maker for dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Are we good?
No, I'm good. I'm great. Yeah, no. Okay. Especially since the intellectual part of the episode is over, now I can just like laugh at rap.
Exactly.
Music.
So it, you know, going with the episode for the music discussion, we're gonna talk about some songs that are themed in racism. You know, about the topic of it, either dealing with, you know, an aspect of it. I tried to be really specific with it and just look for songs that
were hilarious
about, you know, systemic racism, but there's just so many songs that are just about racism more broadly that it's just like, no, we just gotta talk about it. So this first one is actually like a real classic This is Brad Paisley featuring LL Cool J, Accidental Racist.
So when I see that white cowboy hat, I'm thinking it's not all good. I guess we're both guilty of judging the cover, not the book.
Yo, get all the way the fuck out of here with that.
This is real. What year is this?
That was 2012.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yep. Nah. There's like a. They did press for this. Yeah. There's like a CNN clip of them talking about this that looks like a parody. Looks like a fucking State Farm commercial.
I'm gonna try not to think about that.
So that's just a little bit of LL's verse, but Brad Paisley, he's singing about going into like a coffee shop and getting served by, I assume, a black waiter, and he's got a Lynyrd Skynyrd shirt on, so he's got the rebel flag and he's feeling bad about it. And I think this shit really happened. I think this nigga really went into some place wearing the rebel flag, and some black people cussed him out, and he went to the studio like, I have to call LL. Where's Cool James?
Any sort of rap country shit, miss me. Just fucking miss me.
You know, I want to say that, but like, the Nelly Tim McGraw joint, in a certain frame of mind, I could see how people fucked with that.
I'm rolling my eyes.
I mean, I'm just keeping it real. I didn't say I fucked with it. I'm just saying I understand how people thought it was.
Shit.
Yeah, you know.
It's all in my head.
Yeah, how you gonna make fun of it when you know every syllable? I think in the right hands, anybody who's capable can make anything dope. And obviously, LL Cool J is one of the greatest rappers of all time. But that shit was trash. So the next joint is a pretty interesting one. This is Jordan Lucas, I'm Not Racist, from 2017. It's his conversational concept song. Check this out.
Talking about slavery like you was around back then. Like you was picking cotton off the fucking ground back then. Like you was on the plantation getting down back then.
I'm Not Racist. This is like the dialogue between like the MAGA hat wearing bearded white guy and then the black dude, right?
Yeah, the black kid.
They're like sitting at like a table together.
It's framed as a conversation. A lot of it got flack when it came out because some people thought that the white dude's verse was either longer or had more thought put into it or something like that. I don't know. Like in any event, it's like it's the song that he chose to make. You know what I mean? It I don't really give it any sort of judgment on that. It's more the quality of it that I'm thinking about.
Well, also the way it's positioned structurally in the song. Like when I first watched it, like watched the music video, and the music video starts and it's this white guy rapping about how black people are bad. I was just like, yo, what the fuck?
What
the fuck?
From like a artsy fartsy standpoint, I think that's like the intention is like
it invokes like a
it's
reaction.
Supposed to be provocative.
Invokes, yeah. You immediately are kind of a little bit pissed off.
I mean, the second, you know, again, it's another one of those songs where, admittedly, it's like the first few times I heard it a few years ago, I was like, you know, I kind of felt the same way. But listening to it more these last few days, leading up to this, it's like, all right, the argument that both of the verses are equally as long and that, you know, they both have equal time if you actually like look at it. So it's like, okay, I don't know. I don't mind it as much as I did when I first heard it, but maybe I'm getting soft or something.
Definitely getting soft.
I mean, it definitely gets hokey towards the end because they like make up and hug and it's like, oh, if only we could just put the racism aside and hug it out. So yeah, you know, I mean, I hear all those criticisms, but it's rap really well, and I just dig the concept. It's not like I dig it when people do songs that like make me like, damn, I wish I had thought about that first, you know. And this song definitely has some of that. So the next joint is Black America Again by Common featuring Stevie Wonder.
Now we slaves to the blocks, on them we spray shots, leaving our own to lay in a box. Black mothers
Anytime anybody is like, black on black crime needs to end, and like doesn't actually bring into it the systemic dimension of like why we're killing each other.
In his defense,
I just like don't give a fuck.
I just don't.
My eyes just roll back in my skull and I fucking die a little bit.
That was just one bit of the song. I don't think that's a fair description of that song. But I don't know. Is that your only feeling on it? I mean, because that song to me is
I fuck with Common.
Yeah, that's what it's like. Typical. I'm not saying this in a bad way at all, but it's like it's like standard Common fare. You know what I mean? Like he's always like hitting on those sort of points.
Uplifting the community.
And I mean, I think it's. I don't think that we should be so reactionary that Common can't say black men don't kill each other. I mean, it's one thing if Ben Shapiro's punk ass is saying it, but Common should be able to say it, you know what I mean?
No.
What, you disagree?
I mean, like, you don't hear fucking Luke Bryan singing songs about how white people need to stop killing each other.
What the fuck is a Luke Bryan?
When most fucking homicides happen intra-racially.
I understand that. I just don't think that Common's mention of this in the song is like coming from the same place that somebody concerned trolling when you're trying to bring up systemic racism is coming from when they do it.
This is an episode about systemic racism. If motherfuckers aren't addressing the systemic roots of the issues in our community,
okay, well,
they're not serving us, and I'm sorry.
In Common's
being
defense,
like, put the guns down. Who the fuck you thought? Like,
Listen.
Okay, but listen and think about it for a second. How many people do you think Common got to put their guns down over this song?
I don't know.
Yeah, because nobody fucking put their guns down over the song. However, if a song had been crafted around addressing the roots of black homicides in poverty, in, you know, housing insecurity, in a lack of education, why aren't they funding that shit?
Again, just a sliver of a 6-minute long song.
To raise awareness for policy change that could, like, actually impact the roots of intra-racial homicide, fucking, that would be dope.
He ain't get
nobody put their guns down because of this shit.
I honestly think that's an unfair characterization of one line.
Well, fuck you then.
No, for real though. Like, I mean, this is a 6-minute song.
Cool.
That's called Black America Again. The nigga definitely hits on systemic racism at least a couple times in the shit.
I'm not even trying to hate on the rest. I'm not even trying to denigrate any of Common's work.
I mean, so is your argument that should never be mentioned at all?
I don't think it's useful to tell people to put their guns down. Unless you're actually mediating, like, gang conflict in, like, an actual interpersonal way.
But, I mean, that's where it stems from, though.
Man, next song. I ain't getting into this.
I mean, look. I mean, just keeping it real, like, I grew up on gangster rap. That was, like, the first rap shit that I listened to. You know what I mean? When I first started listening to rap. And it's, like, there was... Like, the ethos of it wasn't really, yeah, yo, like, killing each other is dope. You know what I'm saying? Like, that wasn't, you know, like, as a matter of fact, it was quite, like, vehemently, like, nah, like, put the gun down, black man, don't, we need to stop shooting each other, you know what I mean? Like, we need to, like, aim at, like, in some cases, people were like, we need to aim at them, which brings us to the next song. So when I say the name Sir Mix-a-Lot, what do you think about? I like big butts and I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny. When a girl walks in with an itty bitty waist and a round thing in your face, you get
degrees.
So yeah, Sir Mix-a-Lot. You know, I used to listen to Sir Mix-a-Lot like around when Baby Got Back first came out. And it's like, I actually had that album that was on. It's called Mac Daddy. Actually, it's executive produced by Rick Rubin. And Sir Mix-a-Lot did a lot of the beats on it. But I've been saying since I was a little kid that Sir Mix-a-Lot is one of the most underrated rappers of all time that just nobody gives credit to because of the strength of Baby Got Back. They forgot how nice he was on the mic. But this shit has some crazy concept songs on it. I mean, there's shit where he's rapping like he's a Ferrari. There's a song where he's rapping from the perspective of being heroin. So he's got this cut on that album that's called Jackback that is pretty much just like a Nazi murder fantasy about him beefing with a clan, with like a squad of skinheads and getting revenge killings because they burned a cross in his yard. It's really fucking awesome. Let's check a little bit of that. I've been jacked by the racist
scum and here I come. Yo, this shit is wild.
Yeah.
Wild.
I mean, it's
wild.
And I really enjoy that, you know, because we were just talking about, you know, black on black crime, but it's like this is essentially a 90s gangster rap song, but the antagonist of this gangster rap story isn't another black man. It's actual skinhead racists that he's like doing drive-bys on and catching slipping.
You love to see it.
All right, and last we got is actually my favorite of the joints that I found and I was listening to. This is a song by Marlon Craft called Gang Shit. Let's check this out. We're gonna make America white again. Cause I don't want to compete with people who work harder than me because we all spited them. And if I can sit in. So fucking dope.
It's so fucking catchy.
Yeah, that shit's. Yo, when I first heard that shit, it was stuck in my head for days. But I like. I think this is similar to the Jonah Lucas I'm Not Racist one in the sense of like. The framing and how it's set up, where the rapper's taken on the character of these different personalities. That was just a snippet, but in the course of the song, he plays the role of a cop, and he's like talking about how the cops view black people. Then he plays the role of a Klansman, and he's talking about how the Klansman views black people. And then he plays the role of like a black guy who's actually in jail, who grew up in the hood, and he's like, my gang shit landed me in prison. And your gang shit got you on the street walking the beat and you sitting at home, you know, with your family and shit.
Having dinner, yeah, sitting around the dinner table.
And it's just really, I think it's more effective than the Jonah Lucas song because it's a better song. You know what I mean? It's got like a catchy hook. I think the beat's better. It's just an iller song. And kind of that's important when you're trying to make messages with your shit is that it sounds good because I think your point can get across.
Right.
Better.
It's important for like catching the attention of your audience to like lure them into paying attention to the broader message.
Exactly. So that's going to be it for our music discussion and that's going to be it for our episode.
I, for one, feel like rapping.
I feel like rapping, too.
And I also want to wish everyone a very happy Juneteenth this Friday.
Yeah, don't work. General
fucking strike. Don't buy shit, don't go to work. You see, I ought to be a prodigy just like my parents thought I'd be instead of squandering my doctorate, partying heartily, lost in the goxagit, looking like chocolate broccoli, panoptic lock and key, so I'm watching me constantly, cause I braided and straightened until the grade 10th when I decided I was kinda tired of homogenization, but ain't she changed since, my looks like Angie Davis, it erases, from close to observation, I'm whiter than millionaires.
Look, I don't got a toolie to spit, but when it comes to written verses, I am truly legit, I'm on another different curve, I ain't in school with you prick. Cause what I drop will give the urge to kick a dude in his shit. I'm proving it this, spit obscene words and then I dip. I stack the bread and that means work and I persist. I mix the red and the green herb and I equip. Come off the head with a mean verse and let it rip. Nigga shit, how do you doubt the kid? I'm the alchemist, I insist. If you brought the piff, let me light the stick. I'm the prince with the lion fist. I'm about the shits, I'm the shit. What the fuck is drip? Light without a wrist. In the meanwhile, I'ma leave your host pissed off. I freestyle better than your whole disc. Gog, a quick nod to my dope heads, you gon' get robbed from now on. Not knife, nigga, no, just God, dope. Yeah, yeah. Hey, I'm Dope Knife.
I'm Lingua Franca.
And we are waiting on reparations.
Hurry up, we'll
see
you guys
next week. Waiting on Reparations is a production of iHeartRadio.
Listen to Waiting on Reparations on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like...
Whoa.
And? Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
Zero Foxtrot isn't just a brand. It's a way of life. Founded and operated by veterans, Zero Foxtrot's unique apparel and gear echoes the grit of the warrior culture. Zero Foxtrot dedicates itself to producing content, honoring the sacrifices of forgotten heroes of the past, and connecting history to the present. Embark on a journey with Zero Foxtrot today at ZeroFoxtrot.com. It's not merely our products. It's about the ethos that we embody. Rugged, resilient, and timeless.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.